And welcome to those of you in the audience. We are going to have a simultaneous public hearing on House Bill 2415, and we'll also open the public hearing on House Bill 2744. Jim?
Thank you, sir. House Bill 2415 abolishes the Certificate of Initial Mastery and the Certificate of Advanced Mastery, declares an emergency effective July 1, 2003. House Bill 2744 directs school districts and public charter schools to implement content standards and statewide assessment in mathematics, science, and English. Directs school districts to implement Certificate of Initial Mastery in mathematics, science, and English. Makes implementation for other subjects optional. Declares an emergency effective July 1, 2003.
Okay. And Representative Miller is here as the sponsor of House Bill 2415. Come up, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, State Representative Randy Miller, District 37. I appreciate very much, Mr. Chairman, especially your willingness to hear this bill. A bill that is the product, frankly, of years of monitoring not only my daughter's education, she who is about to graduate from Westland High School this year, but also sons I've had in public schools who have caused me to be acquainted with SIM, and maybe someday can, but we hope not. But her association and that of so many other students and the connection we've had with them and teachers and many administrators, frankly, and counselors, has led me to the conclusion that this is a system that needs to be abolished. The origination of SIM and CAM grew out of a bill that I voted for, Mr. Chairman, back in 1991, the School Improvement Act. All of us at that time, as we are today, we're very interested in trying to get a better education product for the education consumer. That doesn't disappear with the adoption of House Bill 2415. Quite the contrary, I think the education product would be vastly improved if we indeed used our resources in a more meaningful way. The students that I've talked with, many of whom are very good students, in the case, and I didn't bring this because of my daughter, but it's the easiest point of reference for me, is she's a National Honor Society student. She is not one trying to dodge the requirements of SIM. She is now applying to colleges and universities around the country. We have yet to receive one inquiry from a college or university who cares one whit whether or not she had a SIM. The students don't understand the relevance of a test they are asked to teach to. The frustration that they feel is real. It is demonstrated in the classroom. The students understand when you are simply going through the motions rather than allowing people who come to education with creativity, who want to impart knowledge to our students, to be trapped by a test that, frankly, nobody believes in. So the short of the bill is that it would abolish that system. But importantly, Mr. Chairman and members, this doesn't suggest that we are abandoning testing our kids. We should. We need to increase accountability. And we will. And we will do that in the No Child Left Behind legislation, which actually, as you know, all of you know, will require more testing in more grade levels. And I think that's important. I subscribe to that. What I find objectionable, particularly in the role I have now in the Ways and Means process, is that we feel compelled somehow to spend money doing our own thing when we could simply borrow from the expertise and knowledge of those who are into writing national standardized tests, similar to the kind many of us grew up taking, who have enormous banks of questions from which to draw from. Certainly we would participate in that development, but to develop a test that is just Oregon's, to be measurable against what? I mean, I've had some people who defend this program say, well, you know, This is the only test of its kind. Well, yes, it is. And that's because people around America who have looked at this have had absolutely no desire to copy it. And so what we should do is go with what others have adopted and will adopt as the No Child Left Behind gathers steam throughout the country. And, you know, we don't have to recreate the wheel, spend this kind of money or resource on developing, again, Oregon's own when it's so available in other places at less cost. Less frustration, frankly. We have had, as you know, Mr. Chairman, a huge amount of difficulty getting an accurate number, a believable, credible number from the Department of Education with respect to what this exercise costs. To date, no accurate number has been forthcoming in my request as the co-chair of Ways and Means in order that we may develop a meaningful budget with respect to the department. Why it is they don't want to tell us the figure, I think I have an idea. And I think it's natural in this process that when you are a part of a bureaucracy that has developed a test, developed a program, you will do almost anything to hang on to it. I don't think we have that luxury. I mean, they suggested, I think, in the report they may have given to you, there was just maybe $8 million more than the requirements, I believe, of No Child Left Behind. I don't think we should waste that $8 million even in the good times. I don't think we can afford it. It wasn't wise policy then. It isn't wise policy, especially today. And so I'm hopeful that you will consider that as we go forward. I can remember 2 years ago, or not even that long, one of the special sessions. We had a bill in that I'd supported in an earlier session making SIM and CAM optional in the districts. You know, really testing the theory that many of us espouse local control. Wouldn't that be good? Well, I remember vividly one of my colleagues in the Senate at that time saying, we couldn't possibly pass this bill because if we made it optional, no one would do it. Well, there's a lesson there. You know, if we gave schools the option as to whether or not to proceed on this course, would they? You know, I don't want to necessarily get in the way of that. If they really believe it, fine. And I know there are supporters of the current system on this committee, and you all have learned views on this subject, and I respect them, whatever they are. But I'm just telling you, as someone who has encountered so much opposition, in fact, I would say we've had as much contact on this particular bill as maybe anything I've been associated with in this process during the 20 years I've been privileged to be here. And I would say, and I'm not overstating this case, that well over 90% of the contacts are in opposition to maintaining SIM and CAM. These are, I'm handed here, among the dozens of emails that we've received, and I know there is also a website where there's a petition that's been established, and there are well over, I believe, 1,300 contacts from a variety of students, administrators, counselors, and teachers. I think we need to listen to that. And the old standard I used to have in my office, if I ever got anything that got over 5 pieces of mail or phone calls, it was a huge issue. So this is very important to Oregonians, and Mr. Chairman, I applaud you and the committee for at least indulging this concept, for hearing it out. I know you're going to go on the road on Wednesday, I believe it is, and then
Thursday,
and I appreciate that very much, because this isn't about any one individual here who's got it in for a particular program. It ought to be a way, as I know you all are intending to do, design the best education system we can for the kids that we serve. And Mr. Chairman, I do want to say one thing. Knowing that you've taught almost everyone in this capital, having read, and you always got to be careful about what you read because sometimes the context is not exactly full. But you had said, if this is accurate, that in response to this bill, that when you were coaching, that you didn't ask your student athletes whether or not they like running wind sprints. You know, I thought that was great, because I used to run a few of those myself, and it wasn't necessarily pleasant, but I can tell you, I believe in, at that time it had a purpose. It would help me perform better on the athletic field. I don't believe our students, our consumers, have this kind of confidence with respect to SIM and CAM. They're being asked to do something that they don't believe in, that they haven't seen any merit for, and that the teachers feel the same way. And so that is why I've asked for your consideration of this bill and the consideration of the many, many parents and students who find this particular system offensive and not productive. So with that, I my sincere thanks to you, Mr. Chairman, for this committee.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Questions? Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Miller, I know you're aware that the data bank and the assessment questions were developed by teachers around the state. Knowing that, how do you equate that with the idea of local control and then purchasing a test that is nationalized, kind of on the one-size-fits-all theory?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hobson, it's my understanding that we would be a necessary part of selecting from the bank of questions what questions we believe would be suitable for Oregon. What it means is we wouldn't have to individually write all of the questions, take all of the valuable time of our instructors to go through that exercise. And so there's, so far as I know, and you would know, that there are testing organizations who have that pool of questions available, and who also, importantly, are able to grade these tests. And I find it kind of a difficult situation where we want to pride ourselves on the progress of our students, and when maybe in the early years it wasn't going especially well, there's some thought that perhaps the grading standards were altered so as to make it look like we were making progress. I don't know the truth or fiction of that, but you can sure as heck eliminate it by having some impartial group of graders take a look at how Oregon students are doing, and you have the added benefit, in my personal view, of knowing how we are doing not only school to school but state to state. Right now with the SIM, we don't have a clue how some student in another state would do on that test.
Well, thank you, Representative. We appreciate your coming in.
I know you do, Mr. Chair.
That's right. Absolutely.
I do thank you very much.
You bet. Members, I'm going to speak from here rather than join the representative who's now gone at the testimonial table. I would say that we brought House Bill 2744 to continue Oregon's standards for K-12 schools and at the same time try to reduce burdens on students and teachers. Currently, if the SIM were to continue, and by the way, 2744 talks only about the SIM. It does not discuss CAM. We would want to discuss that at a different time with a specific look at CAM. So currently, if the SIM program is fully implemented, there would be 7 subjects that a student would have to meet or exceed standards. We're talking English, which is reading and writing, math, science, social science, art, physical education, and second language. So my view is it would seem to me that we could do better if we maintained our standards but in fewer subject areas. That's kind of the genesis of House Bill 2744. So we would narrow the subjects to be tested to earn a SIM to English, math, and science. Those are the 3 subjects that the No Child Left Behind Act mandates. This bill has no impact on curriculum offerings of a school or on the number of credits that a student has to pass in order to graduate. Subjects that are required now, such as U.S. history, would still be required. So I bring this bill in part Two, because I found that a number of objections to the SIM may not hold up when we really carefully examine them. For example, cost. I've received emails, and I've heard people speak that it may save the state $300 to $500 million if we eliminated the SIM and the assessments. We have, on the other hand, two studies recently done, one by COSA, Confederation of School Administrators, and the other done by the Oregon Department of Education, which indicate that the cost is much less than that. I've also had emails from a number of superintendents around the state who indicate that if the SIM or the assessments were to go away, there would be little savings to an individual school district. Those are now embedded into the curriculum, and there would be no vast amount of money that could be, say, moved into the classroom to lower class sizes or whatever. There are those who say that the SIM doesn't mean anything. I submit that it does. A recent Oregon University OUS study indicated that those students who own a SIM do very well in college. It is an excellent predictor of college success, as good as the SAT. Students who went to Oregon State University who took a college math class received considerably higher grades than students who did not earn a SIM. There is merit to earning a SIM. I also believe there are a number of large corporations around our state who are going to make a SIM somewhat important, very important to a student who applies for a position in that corporation. I do believe there is merit in a SIM. I would say, I could say a lot more things, but I think we've got the groundwork established here. We've got the parameters established. So there are those of us who think that the statewide assessments do have value. I wish Representative Miller, he is here. Representative Miller would appreciate this. Representative Miller likes to play golf, and he's very good at it. I could ask the good representative, what is the standard in golf? And he would say, par. We measure our golfing abilities, skills, that particular day, with the standard of par. I believe we need a standard in education. I believe the SIM, the statewide assessments, will do that for us. With that committee, that's my pitch. So we'll now take public testimony, and we'll try for 3 minutes. Jim is very good at keeping us on task, and he will hold us up with 1 minute to go. We have a lot of people. Yes, yes. Excuse me, and I note that we have the Department of Education representatives here. Superintendent Susan Castillo is here. Okay, excuse me. Okay. Jill Kirk, Pat Burke, and Bill Oddie. We'll try that order.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Jill Kirk, Chair of the State Board of Education, and I am here to testify in favor of House Bill 2744. I want to tell you that we are very proud of what the State of Oregon has accomplished in education over the last 12 years. If I could take you back a little bit, we responded at that time to the feeling among many Oregonians, particularly those in the business community, that a high school diploma was not necessarily a reliable credential or indicator of what students really needed to know. We decided to set rigorous standards for what Oregon students should know and should be able to do. And we designed effective assessments to determine whether students were meeting those standards. In designing them, as the chair has mentioned, we relied on the skill and knowledge of the people on the ground, the teachers in Oregon. And we really have seen extraordinary progress on the part of students and teachers as more and more students have been meeting those standards that we have set. I believe that you have copies of the state report card, which have some indicators of those progress points. We recently have had a very important independent confirmation of the value of the standards and assessments. An extensive study undertaken by the Oregon University System showed that strong performance on the 10th grade assessments in the SIM areas aligned extremely well with college entrance requirements, and as the chair pointed out, are very strong indicators of performance in college, as strong as the SAT, and also they are a strong indicator of performance on the SAT. And since they are taken at least a year in advance of that, it gives students time to prepare themselves a little more fully for that exam. So what we have is a system where all along the way, from the early grades on forward, students really are getting a reliable indicator of where they are and whether they're on track for performance. And I think you have a copy of that study as well. While we are proud of these accomplishments, we welcome these bills and this discussion because we recognize the need for reevaluation and for continuous improvement. And we think that all of us here, Chair Backlund and your committee and Chair Miller and the State Board of Education, have in common a focus on the federal legislation, the No Child Left Behind. Federal law requires assessments in three areas, English, language, math, and science. These are areas where the state has fully implemented its standards and assessments, and students who meet or exceed those standards receive the certificate of initial mastery at this point. We had planned, as the chair mentioned, to expand the range of academic subjects beyond those three into second language, arts, physical education, and social science. 2 weeks ago, the board began discussions toward a decision in which we have concluded that there just is not presently capacity to follow that original course of the Education Act for the 21st century. And so, consistent with the approach both of Chair Backlund and Chair Miller, we believe that the SIM should be based on the three federally mandated areas, math, science, and language arts. We do, however, go beyond Chair Backlund and have asked the Department of Education to set high standards for social science, the arts, second languages, and physical education, and provide assessment models for those students who would like to work toward those standards. But the critical distinction is that all students will be expected to rise to the level of the standards in language arts, in math, and in science. And in the other areas, not less important academic areas, and with high standards, they will rise to them as they are drawn by their own interest or talent or career plans. Just a quick bit about CAM. The idea behind CAM is that each student should build a personal plan for his or her high school years with an eye toward their future, and that each student should have an opportunity to apply classroom learning in context, either inside or outside the classroom. We think there are really powerful common sense values behind doing that, and whether there is a CAM certificate or not, we would like to see that that will continue to be embedded in the education program in Oregon. With that, I would like to turn over to you, Pat Burke, who will speak to you more.
Thank you, Jill. Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. I want to take just a few minutes to speak in support of the approach taken in House Bill 2744. I have, of course, already presented extensively about federal law before this committee, but let me recall just a few quick items to assist the committee and actually in both of these bills around federal law and No Child Left Behind. First, I think it's important to note that the federal law requires extensive development and an approval process for any state in its system of standards and assessments. The federal law requires that each state develop its own standards and that there's no set of national standards or national assessments this particular point was debated very extensively during the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, and it was a key element of the legislation that every state was expected to have a set of high academic standards and a set of assessments directly related to those states' standards, and that that was part of the approval process identified in the law for the funding of the federal programs that are covered under No Child Left Behind. Now, any state that does not have a federally approved statewide set of standards or assessments is putting its federal funds in jeopardy, and first in the administrative cost of those federal funds, and ultimately all of the funds, or potentially all of the funds, being either withheld or reduced. Pleased to say, as I've said in my testimony on prior occasion to this committee, Oregon was one of the first states in the United States to have its system approved, and there's still only 19 states in the United States currently that have an approved system, and Oregon is one of those states. Now, I'd like to point out a few things about the federal law which you have before you. I believe you have copies of the federal law. The law states that, quote, any state desiring a grant under Title I shall submit to the Secretary a plan developed in consultation with local education agencies, teachers, principals, administrators, and parents that satisfies the requirements of this section. In other words, every state has to submit a plan demonstrating that it has high standards and assessments. And it's supposed to do that in language arts, mathematics, and science. Again, if you turn to page 27 in the law, what's the state's responsibility? The state education agency, in consultation with local education agencies, has to show that it has implemented a set of high-quality yearly student academic assessments, established a set of standards, established a set of assessments linked to those standards. And again, on page 34 and 35 of the federal law, it says, quote, if the state makes significant changes, such as new academic assessments, we are required to notify the Secretary of Education of those changes. And you will see that in making some of those changes, there are potentially severe financial penalties for not complying with federal law. On June 28th of 2001, we received a letter from the U.S. Department of Education, which you also have a copy of in front of you, approving the Oregon State System of Standards and Assessments. And in reading from the letter, and I quote, I am pleased to provide full approval of Oregon's assessment system, close quote. So we in Oregon, and I think through a lot of work on the part of many people in this room and elsewhere in the state, have gone through an extensive development and approval process for our current system and have received the appropriate federal approval for that. That system is a high-quality system, and it's already in compliance with federal law, and it is the type of system that House Bill 2744 would help us retain. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Audie. I'm the Associate Superintendent for the Office of Assessment and Evaluation. And I'm here to provide some information, facts about the statewide assessment system, which is underneath a lot of this discussion. And I'm speaking to two pages that you have on the left-hand side of your folders. And the questions have a lot come around the quality and the cost of the Oregon assessment system. And for what context, from 91 through 2000, I was in a school district and initially very suspicious of the statewide assessment system. I said, you better show me the technical manuals, you better show me how this works, and the department answered all my questions. But they didn't just convince me, they also looked at ACHIEVE, which is a bipartisan nonprofit organization that works with states around their standards. And they've certified that Oregon standards and assessment systems meet professional standards. There's also professional organizations in the assessment community that set standards for large-scale state tests, and we've commissioned a study, and those standards are met by the Oregon assessment system. The cost issue relates primarily to the fact, well, first of all, to the fact that no other test, as Pat said, could off the shelf meet the Oregon standards. The law requires us to construct or adapt a test to the Oregon standards. Therefore, the first job, if we contracted, would be to go through and look at the items that they have and then match them. Essentially, be redoing the work that we've done with Oregon teachers over the last 10 years. There's also been some rework for teachers and working in schools. If you now have a new assessment coming in, there's professional development time to adjust to the new standards. So there's a cost there. It's probably not well understood that Oregon already contracts out more than two-thirds of our assessment program. The work like the shipping, the printing, the packing, the scoring, and the scanning are all done by contractors. And we've put those bids out nationwide. We've invited every national publisher to bid on them. And we've chosen the lowest cost bidders in each case. Now, for example, we're contracting with the prison system, Oregon Corrections Enterprises, to print and ship our test this year. And I defy any other publisher to print a 40-page booklet for 60 cents. It's a great deal. What we do not contract out is the test construction, the writing of the test questions, and also the scoring of our writing and performance assessments. We leave that to Oregon teachers. We think that provides the best connection between the standards, which are our target, and the classroom instruction, which is where you can actually get the work done. So we work hard in our scoring, and particularly performance assessments, and with the multiple choice, are objective and highly reliable, and we do studies every year to ensure that reliability. Just beside the having teachers participate in the scoring of our performance assessment, we think it provides for a good connection. It's also valued professional development by teachers. For example, right now, because we're not doing so many performance assessments, we have a waiting list of 200 teachers who would like to participate in the scoring this year. Another question has come up with how much classroom time this takes. If you look at the back of the first page, the listing of all the tests that we give, and even if you double that time for all the, to administer the test to allow for other preparation activities, it still comes out to less than 2% of any of the instructional time in a year. And if you look at what we're going to do in 2003-04, when we are adding in, phasing in the new tests and off grades, because we can spread them out over grades, we won't increase in any particular grade the testing. The last two bits for your information are just going out on the web to see what publishers' advertised prices are. ITBS, Iowa Test of Basic Skills, and Stanford offer tests that are similar. And even though they don't off-the-shelf meet our requirements, they're still, at least in their advertised price, more expensive than what we do our tests for. So that's information. We're all available for any questions.
Representative Farr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions, if I may. I've heard from a number of people that are concerned that Simon Cam doesn't have a great deal of meaning once a child gets out of high school. That is to say, with higher education and with employers. Do you agree with that?
I'll quickly respond that I do not agree with that, although I think that has been true in the past. I think we are coming now to the point where there is more of a sort of a critical mass that's been developed. And while the university system may say that it doesn't value a SIM, it clearly values performance to the SIM standards and proficiency at that level, which is essentially the same thing. And I think you will have an opportunity to hear from some of the business community even later in this hearing about the way they have informed the development of these standards and the value that they hold.
Follow up.
Thank you. And I have heard that said also. I have kids in school and we're very involved with the school, of course. If I may rephrase that, you're saying that the business community and higher education is kind of coming around to understand that the performance standards of SIM.
And I think that's happening because we're having more and more students who have gone through school with a SIM now and are emerging into post-secondary education and into the world of employment, and they're in great enough numbers that they can really be understood as having significantly greater proficiency than students who didn't rise to that standard.
So then would you agree with me that while the standards are very good standards and the results produced by teaching to the standards are good, that the word sin has the means nothing?
Sim is not my favorite word. I absolutely would agree with you on that. I think, quite candidly, if we knew now, if 12 years ago we knew what we know now, we probably wouldn't have done the legislation in quite the same way, and we wouldn't have done the implementation in quite the same way. But we have, throughout this period of time, been careful about correcting and amending and revising and informing the policy work and the implementation with what we learn as we go along. So if you were to suggest to me that at some point in time we didn't talk about SIMS and CAMS, it would not break my heart as long as we continue to hold these very high standards and we have good assessments and we have all the rest of the important academic side of it in play.
Mr. Chair, I have a whole bunch of questions that I will yield.
Oh, okay.
Representative
Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Audi,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned three things that I want to weave a thread among and see if there's an opportunity out there. You mentioned, I think the chair mentioned it when he introduced his the bill, that the University of Oregon has done a study recently that talks about, demonstrates, quantifies, if you will, the effectiveness of the SIM in predicting performance in colleges. And then you mentioned that you are able to provide this testing mechanism more cheaply than off-the-shelf tests that you have found by publishers of educational testing materials. And finally, I'm conscious of the fact that every state must now have some system of standards and assessment. So my question to you is whether you have considered the possibility that we may have a marketable product to other states.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, yes, particularly with our online assessment. Mm-hmm. We've looked at whether we're not in the business of selling things.
Understood.
However, we've looked at consortium arrangements, sharing of items, getting trade-offs, things like that. And we have had folks contact us in some area. That's okay. Yes.
That was my next question, whether you've had any inquiry given, especially, although the U of O study is a little too recent for people to pay attention to this as a predictor for college success, but I suspect when this gets out in the trade, in the profession, that you might have more interest from people wanting to know how Oregon has done it.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, yes, and for particular some other of the subparts of No Child Left Behind, we have to develop an English language proficiency test, which we haven't done in the past, so we're in development mode, but we're in a consortium with other states, and we got a federal grant to support that work, and we're trading our expertise with theirs, so we're able to do that development.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, excuse me, Representative Dalton. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's okay. I thought you were scanning. I have a question for Mr. Audi. I wonder if you can elaborate a little bit on the test time matrix that you pointed out to us. I guess in reviewing the numbers for the 2001 and 2002 year, is this a model that the department has developed, or are these required amounts of time? Or do they actually reflect the real-world experience of what the time might be in an actual classroom? I wonder if you could speak to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Alto, those numbers are essentially from our test administration manual. And none of the tests are timed tests, so there's not a strict time. Our standard is to recommend to construct the test and publish these times, such as 80% of students should be able to complete the test with no problem in that amount of time. And so these are just the actual administration times. Many students do them quicker than that. A few require more time.
Mr. Chair?
Follow-up?
So I'm going to come back to that point in a moment, but if I read the asterisk here, it says that the time that you've allotted for the testing time is equal to the additional preparation time. So I really would take these numbers of time, 100 minutes for reading, for example, and divide that in half. Is that how I understand this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, no, I apologize, not clear about that. That note only refers to the percent of instructional time. So if the way I calculated that was to take, for example, at grade 3, 3.33 hours of testing time, double that, divide that by 810 to get the 0.8%. So we took the time it required for testing, saying generally, however long you spend testing, you might spend twice that much time setting up, preparing students for the test, and those two times together as a percentage of instructional time are the percentages you see in the final column.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Final question. So do you have a mechanism at the department to get an indication of from teachers, from instructors themselves, of how much time they're actually spending? In other words, how's the department able to sort of audit or verify that the folks are not spending too much time on the test preparation?
Right. Representative Backlund, Representative Dalto, there are several mechanisms. There's an opportunity for all teachers to administer tests to provide comments and send them back to us. We work primarily through what are called district test coordinators, or someone identified in every district, and we work with them. When we construct tests, we are looking at the difficulty of items. As from 1991, we have a great deal of experience in how long it takes to do certain tests. So we're reasonably accurate in the tests we've been doing for a while, and then when we do field testing, in other words, introducing a new test, then we are sending out specific questionnaires saying, how long did this take, and asking all any other unintended consequences of our tests.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Thank
you. Okay, thank you very much. We have Michael, is that Kozlow? We have Superintendent Susan Castillo. I see Representative Flores back there. Would you like to come up, Representative? Would you like to begin?
Thank you.
Good.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Susan Castillo, State Superintendent of Public Instruction in Oregon, and I just want to briefly reemphasize what my colleagues have said, and that is that we have a system of standards and assessments that has helped us to improve student achievement, that has withstood scrutiny by independent evaluators, and that has been improved by the federal government. The federal government has praised Oregon for what we have in place, and now, of course, as we all know, is asking all states to create standards and assessments. At the same time, we welcome these bills and this discussion because we realize that this is a time for reevaluation. And as Chair Board Kirk said, all of us seem to be in agreement that we should focus our efforts on the three subjects that are in effect mandated by the new federal law, No Child Left Behind. The board, Chair Miller, Chair Backlund, and myself all agree on that point. I am here also in support of House Bill 2744 and want that on the record. I also want to point out that the system we have in place now absolutely meets the demand by the Oregon legislature for more accountability in our schools. The system we have in place today has accountability built into it every step of the way. Our way of measuring what students know as they move through our system provides accountability for students so they know where they are on how they're meeting our benchmarks. It provides more accountability for teachers, helping them to see where they are with instruction and their students. It helps bring more accountability to the district through the Oregon Report Card, helping to give out information to the public about how students are doing on our assessments, and just in general, really does help provide better information and helps to give us feedback for every child as they move through Oregon system. I realize that everyone is concerned about our school funding crisis, none more than myself. And I would like to do something to ease the burden on our schools. And I know that as we're going through that process, looking at our assessment system and looking at that as a way of eliminating costs is one of the reasons that we're all here today. But eliminating our assessment system is not the answer. It would not save money. In fact, it would cost money to design a new system, as you heard. In the end, the only way to solve our school funding crisis is to adequately fund schools. And I am very committed to working with all of you as you look for ways to provide more funding to our schools. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Michael Coslow, and I'm Director of Assessment with the Northwest Regional Educational Laboratory in Portland. This is an agency that receives federal funds to assist schools and school districts with assessment, instruction, school improvement planning, those areas. I just wanted to comment briefly on some of the issues that states face when they replace one assessment program with another. I'd like to emphasize that there's no short way to do this. Other states that have contracted test agencies to conduct their state assessments have found that there is no existing test that meets the requirements. As has been said earlier, the federal government requires that the assessment in the state be aligned with the standards very specifically. Therefore, it's not possible to find a test on the shelf. And so what states have engaged in then is to work with test companies to align existing instruments with the standards, identify the gaps, then engage in item development, field testing of items to fill those gaps. And other states have simply contracted test companies to develop a whole new assessment from scratch. I think one of the strengths of the current assessment program in Ontario is that it does have a very strong professional development component. So for the funds that are being spent on the assessment, you not only get the data that you need to meet the federal requirements, but you also get improvement of teacher skills. In addition to the specific staff development that the State Department provides associated with administering the assessment, actually participating on item development committees, participating on marking committees, is in itself an excellent professional development activity. In working with large-scale assessments, I frequently hear from teachers that working on these committees is, in fact, the best professional development that they ever engage in. And I've heard that time and time again in many different jurisdictions. It gives the teachers a better understanding of the assessments themselves. It helps them to understand the information that they receive from the assessment so they can use this information more effectively in planning their own classroom instruction, and also strengthens their ability to participate effectively in school improvement planning in the larger perspective. They pass this information on to other staff members in their schools, and more importantly, it also improves their own skills in conducting classroom assessments with their own students in their classrooms. Central marking committees in which teachers mark student writing, complex problem-solving tasks, and extended responses to questions to demonstrate reading comprehension, those types of activities are particularly rich in professional development because it gives teachers a very clear picture of what it is that students are expected to be able to do for satisfactory or exceptional performance. And they can take those examples and that knowledge back to their classroom and communicate very directly with children, here is what is needed for you to move toward the expectation in the curriculum and in the state standards. This type of professional development cannot be achieved in a short form of test that is mostly multiple choice. Teachers simply get that information. They have no involvement in creating the knowledge that is coming back to them. And since these assessments are now very high stakes, with the federal government making judgments about the adequacy of schools, on the results from year to year. Teachers will definitely teach to the test that you implement. So if you're implementing a test that measures a fairly narrow range of skills, that's what will be taught in the school. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Backlund, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And I, for the record, my name is Linda Flores. I'm State Representative for House District 51. In that capacity, I want to convey to you some of the information that I have received from members, my constituency, that who are very concerned about the SIM-CAM program. I would speak specifically in regard to House Bill 2415. In a survey that I had conducted last fall, I had fully 60% of the respondents who were not supportive of continuing SIM-CAM, 33 1/3% who were in favor of six and two-thirds who were in favor of continuing SIM-CAM, and 33 1/3 who really didn't know. Now, in that regard, I would also like to say that I have portions of approximately 7 school districts in my district. The primary school district, and I think you will hear from a representative from them today, is North Clackamas School District. Superintendent Ron Naso and Government Relations Affairs Coordinator Joe Crum. North Clackamas School District is probably one of the best in regard to the SIM-CAM model, and probably a model in the state as far as how it has effectuated this particular program. However, the other school districts in my district have not been as successful, primarily because of the funding issue. I do support the concept of allowing this to be an individual school district, school by school choice, in other words, local control. And I would also support the concept that these particular testing, well, I call it testing because I'm old-fashioned, the assessments, if you will, are well achieved by the good old-fashioned GPA, also the old SAT, and probably third on that list in ranking order now would be the SIM or the CAM and the assessment portfolios that go along. Finally, I would just like to say that I've spoken with a number of school teachers who do not have perhaps the opportunity to be quite open and frank with their particular principals or school district superintendents, as well as college admission assessment and placement personnel who do not consider the CAM results, the assessments, or the portfolios as of significant value when students are applying to their college. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Representative. And I noticed that you put the SAT as a higher method of assessment, and I certainly respect that. And, of course, it's given during the senior year for those kids going to college. How about the assessments of grades 3, 5, 8, and 10?
Well, I was speaking primarily at the senior level in high school, but I would support the assessments that are required by the federal No Child Left Behind Act and those things that would come forward as a result, be developed and implemented as a result of that.
Follow-up?
Are you representing that the state of Oregon has been approved to use the SIM assessments for the No Child Left Behind? Yes, I am.
Okay. Yes, Representative Vaughan.
Thank you, and thank you all for your testimony. Superintendent Castillo, one of the sections of this bill relates to the statewide assessment system for mathematics, science, and English, and there's another section that addresses the instruction or the curriculum in these particular areas and makes a distinction that the districts shall ensure that students receive instruction in math, science, and English, and then goes on to say that the districts may offer instruction in history or geography and PE and arts. And with respect to the use of the term may offer, I'm wondering if you and your department would like to see some further discussion with regard to those being optional courses within districts.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bakken, are you speaking to House Bill 2744? Well, as
and I'm not asking you really what the position is, because I think it's only fair you're able to go back and study the bill more, but just that if that's an area that might require some more discussion.
Well, I think what needs to be clarified as we have these discussions and looking at focusing on the three areas that are mandated by No Child Left Behind, we also want to make clear that the graduation requirements in those other subject areas remain in place. We're not saying that we're changing any of that, and I don't believe that this bill attempts to change that either. I guess I would look to the sponsor of the bill, but I believe the intent is not to change any of the current requirements for graduation. I don't know if that answers your question.
Representative Dalto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for the good representative from Happy Valley. Clackamas.
No, that would be Representative Shaw.
Oh, okay. Well, Representative Flores, my question is, how many surveys did you send out and how many did you get back?
We sent out probably about 3,000. We received about 250 back.
250 back. Okay, thank you.
If I could get back to Representative Labakian's question. In the other areas, PE, foreign language, social studies, and I know I'm missing one.
The arts, yes.
As you saw, I know the state board is working and has expressed an interest in continuing to set statewide standards in those areas and statewide assessments available to districts if they choose to, and leave the decision up to the districts as to how students would opt into those programs. But thank you. And so, we're continuing to work with those various areas on how, in this current climate, we continue to move forward and make sure that students have access to all of those areas as we work on how we change high schools and create that more individualized plans for every student, and making sure that they will have access to all areas.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say, please forgive my breach of protocol for not addressing you first before I made my responses.
That's perfectly all right, Representative. All right. Okay, Jim Needham, John Valley, and Bob Wilner, if you'd come up, please. And we're now going to institute the red flag policy. So if you see it, I guess you have a minute to go.
And then I want to see what you do next.
He's done it before.
You want to go?
Yeah, that's
this way.
Whoever wishes to start, certainly me.
Who wants to start? I can go first.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Backlund and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is John Valley, and I am the Oregon Advocacy Director for the American Heart Association. I'm here to discuss with you the problems associated with removing physical education from the SIM. As I understand it, House Bill 2415 will remove the SIM and CAM system completely, whereas House Bill 2744 will make the Tier 2 subjects under the SIM optional. In either case, the delivery of quality physical education will suffer because there will be no requirement for school districts to offer physical education in their schools. I'd actually like to specifically point out something that I think Representative Avakian had mentioned in House Bill 2744. When you look at subsection 4, the paragraph that says school districts and public charter schools shall ensure that students receive instruction in mathematics, science, and English. In addition, school districts and public charter schools may, and I emphasize may, offer students instruction in history, geography, economics, civics, physical education, health, the arts, second language, and other subjects. The concern of the Heart Association is that physical education and health education may just be dropped off completely in certain school districts, and that's a major concern for the Heart Association. The American Heart Association was a contributor to Oregon's new statewide activity plan, A Healthy, Active Oregon, and was a strong supporter of House Bill 3307 in 1999, which made physical education a Tier 2 subject under the SIM system.
They have long recognized the importance of physical activity in fighting heart disease and stroke, and realized that quality physical education is an essential part of promoting active lifestyles to Oregonians. Physical inactivity together with poor eating habits contributes significantly to the development of obesity, high blood pressure, and heart disease. Currently in Oregon, 28% of 8th graders and 21% of 11th graders are currently overweight. Only 70% of 8th grade students and 50% of 11th grade students meet the minimum recommendation for physical activity. Fewer female students meet the recommendation than males, especially by the 11th grade. By keeping physical education as a Tier 2 subject under STEM, we should be able to increase the percentage of students who meet the Oregon physical education content standards, which will result in healthier and more active students. By having physical education as part of STEM, the state is in a position to encourage local school districts to certify physical education teachers and provide ongoing professional development opportunities for these teachers. Also, with physical education as part of STEM, we are improving the quality of physical education for our youth and improving the overall health of the state. Between 1994 and 2001, obesity among Oregon adults had increased by 59%. Oregon's adult obesity rate is at 22%. The highest in any state west of the Rockies. Add to that the 38% of Oregon adults who are overweight, and we have a total of 60% of Oregon adults who are not at a healthy weight. This is not the time to remove an important tool in the state's efforts to reduce those rates. According to the Centers for Disease Control, among U.S. adults in 1996, $31 billion of treatment costs for cardiovascular disease was related to obesity and being overweight.
John, can you finish up?
Sure. So basically what I'm trying to say, and I think it's obvious from the testimony, is that what we're trying to do is encourage physical activity in the state. Physical education being part of the STEM does that, and the concern is with the bills, especially with 2744-1, I'm looking at the May part of Section 4, Subsection 4, that health education and physical education may be dropped off the table completely. And I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time. Are none?
Thank you. Jim?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, distinguished committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today. My name is Jim Needham. I am a member of the Molalla River School District Board of Education representing myself and an instructor at Clackamas Community College. Our teachers in Molalla have expressed grave concern at how they will be able to meet teaching requirements for their students. Many of our students are afraid because their teachers and parents are afraid. They see teachers threatened with losing their jobs, dances and field trips canceled, and 15 to 21 days of school canceled. I'm here to take a moment to make an appeal for relief. Relief for our teachers who already have a difficult task in teaching core curriculum before the calendar was reduced by 15 days. The statewide assessments for SIM and CAM have been underfunded since their inception, yet teachers and other staff have valiantly continued to perform additional record keeping, testing, and other associated tasks which have been superimposed upon their fundamental teaching duties. Many of the statewide assessments have already been integrated into the Oregon education system, and now we are confronting the formidable task of implementing the federal No Child Left Behind Act. Frankly, we cannot afford any redundancy or duplication of efforts between statewide assessments and No Child Left Behind. I believe that House Bill 2415 is a step in the right direction to abandon the old statewide assessments after 10 years of not entirely achieving their objectives and integrate the new federal No Child Left Behind program and its underfunded mandates. How many unfunded and underfunded government programs and mandates do educators have to endure before public education collapses?
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, maybe I misunderstood something. Are you saying that we should not have the SIM, but instead have the No Child Left Behind assessments?
I'm saying that we have two programs, the No Child Left Behind program and the statewide assessments. And right at this point, I think the SIM and CAM program has pretty much run its course, has been integrated into the school systems, and now we have to deal with the No Child Left Behind program, and I kind of think we should focus on that and not have any duplication for SIM and CAM and No Child Left Behind.
Were you able to hear the previous testimony that indicated that the federal government has approved our SIM testing to meet the mandates of No Child Left Behind?
I understand that the SIM and CAM statewide assessments have provided a foundation for the No Child Left Behind program, but we need to figure out some way to integrate what's already been accomplished into the No Child Left Behind program to relieve the extra burden that's being put on the teachers.
Thank you.
Bob. I'm Bob Wilner. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon International Council. I'm speaking on my own behalf based on my 25 years experience in the U.S. Foreign Service, 22 years working with Oregon Education. I have some technical information on foreign languages being executive secretary there, but basically I'm speaking for myself. A few of the perspectives I want to bring forth. One I've not heard cited is that to me the fundamental purpose of public education is to educate all citizens to run a democracy. And I'm disturbed to hear so much emphasis on the college bound without much reference to the non-college bound, who are a terribly crucial part of our society, and I think a major focus for education reform. And I'd like to reiterate what was said by earlier speakers, that the primary function of the SIM is not to be a certificate, but to provide a learning goal, and to provide an incentive to students to take their learning responsibilities rather than shuffle it off on others. I think it would be extremely harmful at this point to abolish these requirements, because it sends the message to a lot of students that if you face a difficult demand, best thing to do is to close your eyes and it'll go away. We've been hearing that. I've been hearing it from my teacher friends from the beginning of the education reform. A lot of educators saying, don't worry, it'll all go away. And a lot of those people are smirking now, and I would hate to see them right, because I think that would be very harmful for the kids to learn that they really don't have to come up to these standards that people have been talking about. I think it would be a disaster, especially in this very difficult century that's just started. It's not going to make the 20th century look any more difficult. It's going to be very challenging. I think it's crucially important that our kids be educated about the world they're living in. I think we should keep social science and foreign language up for the SIM, as they have been. These are skills that are going to be essential for the century ahead. And I would add that in foreign language particularly, new assessments have been developed in the state which are changing the nature of foreign language teaching and are putting the state in the leadership nationally. That's something I've been delighted to see. Because it means now that foreign language, instead of the most abstract academic subject in the school, is probably the most valuable single performance skill. Kids come out of it actually able to communicate, and I'm delighted to see this. Basically, I just want to make an appeal that we stay the course. This is the winter of our discontent. I hope we use it to pick out what's essential and concentrate on what's essential rather than to throw away what's difficult, but I have a feeling they're the same thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Keith Thompson, Morgan Anderson, and Bill Scott, please. Who would like to begin?
Okay. I guess I'll start. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Keith Thompson. I am recently retired from Intel Corporation after spending 30 years with them, and retired as the Oregon site manager. I'm also a member of the Quality Education Commission and chair of the Oregon Business Council K-12 Task Force, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2744. I got involved in education reform about 8 years ago, mainly on two fronts. First, as a father of two school-aged children, and as a senior manager of Intel Corporation, who was frustrated that as I visited our wafer fabrication facilities in Israel and Ireland, it was obvious that they could take a high school graduate and put them right to work. Whereas in the United States, in our wafer fab facilities, we had to have 2 years of post-high school education to qualify a wafer fab operator. And we had a very simple rule in the high-tech industry: what gets measured improves. And so when Oregon passed the School Improvement Act, I thought it was a wonderful opportunity for Oregon to improve its educational system. You've heard a lot of testimony already about setting high standards for kids, how that's required, and how you need a system of assessments that track our progress. This not only gives feedback to the students, but it also gives feedback to the teachers, so that they can improve the quality of their instruction to improve the output. I'd like to remind you that what we have done over the past 10 years is working. There's been a number of reports published that show that a constant trend, upward trend of improvement in reading and math in both 3, 5, 8, and 10. These are all a result of putting in assessments, measuring the results, and then improving the way to make those assessments get better or to make the teaching get better. I'll be the first to admit that the assessment system is not perfect, but we've invested over 10 years in putting together a system. We have the fundamentals in place. They've been reviewed by national organizations, and you've already heard that the federal authorities have said that they're adequate for Oregon. It's a dynamic system. It's been changed from the field input. You heard from Jill that the board is continuing to review the assessments and make it more flexible. I'd also like to remind you that Oregon intentionally made this not mandatory to graduate. The original concept was certificates would be mandatory. They're now not. However, business is stepping up and trying to give value to the SIM in the form of recognizing achievement. And there's been a number of evaluations at Vocker Siltronics where people that achieved the SIM did much better in their pre-employment qualifications. I would urge you to stay the course, absolutely make adjustments, but this is the time to celebrate the progress we've made over the last 10 years and not jettison the system. Thank you.
Perfect timing.
Okay. I don't like those red cards.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for listening to me. My name is Morgan Anderson. I'm the education manager for Intel, Oregon's largest private employer in the state, and I'm here today to ask to retain the SIN-CAM certificates and to especially protect the English, math, problem-solving, and science portions of the SIM certificate. I want to remind the committee that a decade ago, tests showed that our students were not performing competitively with their international peers. In fact, in the mid-80s, a report came out titled The Nation at Risk that showed that not only were they not competing with their peers, but that they were not competing with where their parents were just a generation earlier. So our schools were going downhill fast in the U.S. Industry saw the lagging results of our school system and asked for higher standards, and out of that, Oregon created one of the most progressive systems, the SIM and CAM. What makes these certificates especially unique is that it tells students exactly how they're performing. It shows them how they need to improve, and it holds them accountable for reaching high standards and demands knowledge retention beyond the next test. And I can tell you, as a student of the past system where we just use national standardized tests, it does not do the same thing. The certificates hold students personally accountable. So what has a decade shown with this system? Well, we have had enormous improvements. Just looking at our 10th grade students, which I want to remind everyone that this is actually where we see the lowest amount of improvements being made, but we see huge improvements in this grade level. 22% more are meeting standards in reading than just a decade earlier. 11% more are reaching math standards. We've had over 100% increase in the students who have reached the math problem-solving component. We have 50% of our students meeting it now compared to just 23% a decade earlier. And nearly 26% of all of our students have reached the requirements to earn a SIM. And this is not as high as it should be, and it's not as high as it will be, but it is critical to note that each year we have seen increases in the number of students reaching the SIM and achieving that. And we have some small school districts where nearly 100% of their students have achieved the SIM, including Power School District, where last year 100% of their school district or their students did receive the SIM. So it can be done. We have enormous success stories. Oregon students' test scores are not only improving, but we are testing in the right areas. We do not have a testing system that only relies on multiple choice, which is not good enough for our students. That's why the math problem-solving component especially is so important. We do math problem-solving at Intel all day long, and imagine how easy it would be if there was an A, B, C, or D, none of the above option for us, but that's not the way it is. So we don't need just multiple tests. We need multiple choice. All the other components of SIM are so critical for our students. And as was pointed out earlier, Achieve, which is a nonprofit dedicated to improving math scores for U.S. students, looked at Oregon's testing system and has applauded it for its thoroughness. And this is a very respected organization that boasts Intel CEO Craig Barrett as a member of their board. And trust me, he does not waste his time on anything that's not really critical and respected. So I'd like to summarize by saying student learning is measurably increasing. We have more students earning their SIM. We have good, solid tests that have already been placed with the upfront investments, and we've already invested in them. Industry does see a difference and wants SIM and CAM to continue. It does demand a lot from our teachers and students, and we shouldn't expect anything less. Our students are no longer competing with their peers in their schools or in their state. They're competing with their international counterparts. And to compete globally, they need high standards, and they need student certificates, or our students will lose. And I'm asking all of you, do not let us go back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. For the record, I'm Bill Scott. I'm the chair of the Leaders Roundtable of Multnomah County. The Leaders Roundtable is a 20-year collaboration. It's about 25 members, including 8 business leaders, about the same number of educational leaders, the superintendents of the largest school districts in Multnomah County, both community colleges, and the president of Portland State University, as well as the mayors of Portland and Gresham, the chair of the Multnomah County Commission, and a number of both state agency representatives and nonprofit representatives who deal with children and families. The roundtable has been focused on outcomes for children since its very beginning, and it's really a forum for these people to get together and try to align everything they're doing so that outcomes for children in Multnomah County can be as good as they possibly can be. And our motto has always been 100% success for the children of Multnomah County. At a recent meeting of the roundtable, when it was brought up in the conversation that the SIM and the CAM were threatened as kind of the backbone of the Oregon school reform system, and there was a kind of a spontaneous uprising saying, you know, we need to take a position on this, because I think these institutional and business leaders in Multnomah County have come to count on the state's certificate structure as the backbone of our alignment efforts, and to help us set priorities and understand how the business community and the local government community can best support the school system. So I'd say that's really the message, is that this group of institutional leaders in Multnomah County is committed to supporting the SIM and CAM system that the state has developed. And a lot of our members have experience with big changes in institutions, and there will always be mistakes and challenges of implementation. And I think it's not a surprise that not everybody loves these things, but it's amazing that the state has gotten the leadership as committed to this program, and I think from my own observation, the classroom teacher as committed to this program as they are. And just drawing briefly on my personal experience, as I was chair of the Oregon School Boards Association 20 years ago when the Nation at Risk report came out and the discussion around standard-based reform began, and I'm a parent of children then and very recently in the public schools in Oregon, and the difference that I see in the ambition of our schools for making every child succeed today compared to what it was 20 years ago is really impressive, and I hope you don't let us down.
Thank you very much. I see Representative Jeff Krupp is here. I saw Representative Gallegos earlier. Is she here at this point?
Outside the door, Mr. Chair.
Remember, ask her to come in, please. And Brian Brown.
Mr. Chairman, apparently she was not outside the room at this time.
Oh, okay. Perhaps Caleb Burns, is it? Caleb Burns could also come up.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to spend just a few brief moments with you, as I will need to depart shortly. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17, and I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2415. This is an issue that has not affected me personally. When my son graduated from high school, he was in the class graduating, I believe, 1 or 2 years before certain of these provisions were to go into effect. So it is, however, one that I have listened to with a great deal of interest over the years. Even before I was in politics, there was great debate in our communities about this particular issue. And I recall very vividly at that time, State Representative Ron Sinceri traveling the state, warning of us of some of the circumstances that would potentially arise should we adopt this type of a policy. Since that time, I have listened to a great many teachers in the district that I have the honor of representing. Administrators. I have one particular superintendent who is very vocal in opposition to this concept, and you all know who he is. I will tell you, generally speaking, the feeling I have of how this particular issue is regarded in my communities is that the parents would really rather see it go away. And it appears that a majority of the teachers that I have talked with also feel that way. And the most often heard complaint that I have heard from them is, in their opinion, this system seems to encumber them to a certain degree. And in their minds, that leads, at least from what the teachers tell me, leads to less effectiveness with their time with kids. My wife tells me a story about the time that our son was having difficulty reading in school. And she tried a number of special programs that were offered within the district at the time and was unable to achieve the results. And she was at that time a single mother and was struggling, working two jobs to make ends meet. She took the time to sit down and read with him. And that's what made the improvement for him. And now he's quite a good reader. I think that's the real issue that confronts us in Oregon today, and I think all across America, is that parents need to be involved in their children's education, deeply involved. And I think there's very broad agreement amongst the educational community. I think that is the issue that really has more impact than most of what we as a legislative body, I say most of, the concepts and ideas and policies that we put forth. So based on my judgment of where this issue is today, in listening to my constituents. I would say I very much approve of high standards, and we should keep those very high standards, and we should expect and demand that our children meet it. But we also, at the same time, I think should not try to pound round pegs into square holes. And I think, to some extent, the reforms have been put in place, again, listening and drawing upon my conversations with teachers and educational professionals that I know, is that this makes it very hard for them to have flexibility. And I think that's a key component also, is allowing teachers to be flexible, to be able to teach in the manner that they feel is going to be most effective. So I would say that if we keep elements of school reform, we should keep the high standards. But in terms of SimCam and some of the other elements, clearly my constituents that I have talked with about this issue over the last 4 years now feel very strongly that this should be rethought, and I would ask that you think favorably in that direction, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I want to thank you, by the way, for you wrote me a very poignant letter on this subject some time ago, and I thoughtfully considered that and appreciated your time in doing so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My good friend, Representative Cruz. Cruz, that was good. Cruz.
Thank you for the promotion.
Yeah, right. if I heard you correctly, you said that you approved of the high standards, and I assume the assessment to achieve the high standards. So what is the part of the SIM that you are proposing that we get rid of?
Well, I look at it this way. I've never sat on an education committee, so again, I'm listening to what people in my district are telling me. And if you want specific portions of the ORS that would deal with that, I can't look at this bill and look at those portions and tell you which ones I think should be held within the concept or not. I think generally what the point I'm trying to convey is that whatever type of educational system that we design in this state, whether it's going back to what we had before or something new, that we need to very clearly hold our children to a very high standard, and it needs to be an equal standard across the board. And I say that from my life's experience. As a pilot, when I took my pilot's training, I was expected to pass a certain grade on the written, and then I had to pass an oral exam, and then I had to pass a flying exam. And irrespective of our backgrounds or our abilities or if we're rich or poor, everyone is expected when they get their pilot's license to meet that high standard. And that's where I think we need to be in Oregon and in America. And I'm not sure SimCam gets us there. And I'm fearful that so many of the things revolving around that I hear from teachers, we've increased their workload. Now they have to go home and they have to grade and work through these work samples. And I know that that is optional in some school districts. At least I've been told that it is. So I would say that I want to see a system that holds people accountable, all of us, in the process. And I say us because the legislature is an important part of that too. But I want high standards. I want us to find a way to help children meet there. And I think that the most important issue, once again, is parental responsibility. And that's pretty hard to legislate that from our perspective as much as we think that there ought to be changes in the home life. That's really difficult for us to have an impact on. But we can have impact on these particular issues. And I don't want anything in place that takes time away from a teacher being able to be face-to-face with a child. Because I think that clearly is where you're able to have the great connection and you're able to share knowledge and meet that child's needs. And that gets back to so many things that we talk about, class size and so many issues that are important in this state. So can I give you a definitive structure that ought to be retained? No, I can't. I don't know enough about this subject. All I'm sharing with you is what I'm hearing from my constituents, and that I think high standards are appropriate. And whatever we do, we need to retain high standards, however we get there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Caleb Burns. I'm a psychologist, PhD, in Portland, and thank you. I'm speaking today in support of House Bill 2415. I'm a believer in good tests, and indeed I test people on a daily basis, but I'm an adamant opponent to bad testing. And so far, the SimTest and statewide assessments appear to be bad tests. At least they haven't been proven to be good tests. They're incredibly onerous. I put them in the category of bad tests. A major reason they are bad seems to be that they're constructed and evaluated by the same core of true believers. This is totally against test construction standards and ensures that these so-called tests will not be evaluated in an unbiased manner. What most people don't realize is that most tests fail to meet standards and then are discarded. Most tests fail. And many evaluation methods have proven themselves to be failures and also must be discarded. But this has not happened to the statewide assessments. And I think this is because of the core of true believers who are supported by a press that's too often cheerleading and which knows nothing about test-related matters. The standards of educational and psychological testing, for instance, sort of our manual on testing, requires that high-stakes tests, and certainly these tests are high-stakes tests, meet exceptionally high standards for proof validity and reliability, but the statewide assessments simply do not. The standards also require a large number of steps to be taken in creation and use of the steps, and the statewide assessment developers have taken very few of these essential steps. For example, no pilot testing was performed before these tests were forced on our children. No technical manuals have been prepared. At least I found none as of several years ago, and I asked ODE repeatedly. My experience is quite a bit different from the gentleman who spoke earlier. The lack of validity data has not been made public. That is, no concurrent, no predictive validity. At least no good validity of any kind. There's a widespread phenomenon called consensual drift. And this takes place when a group of people agree among themselves, but they don't get feedback from the real world, and then they drift further and further out. Communist Russia, I think, is an example of a group of people who drifted further and further out of the mainstream, who did not let their ideas and methods be criticized by others. And so we need an outside critical group, and we haven't had it yet. We can't let the evaluators develop a test. I'd like to speak to two points, if I could. The recent high school grade point average, the SIM research that supposedly predicted freshman grades. If you look at the correlation matrix, you'll see that the best predictor by far is high school grade point average, and this correlates with the SIM scores. Now, if you look at the research, I think if you subtract from the predicted equation high school grade point average, then SIM will predict nothing of college grades. And if you look at previous research that has been done too, it's been unimpressive. But this recent report is incredibly preliminary, and I think that the research is incredibly questionable. And once again, this comes about by not allowing an outside group to evaluate the research. Achieve itself is a group that looks only at content validity. That is,
you
only
did
look
you
at
finish
it.
Up in the sentence. Okay. So, yeah.
The Achieve group is only interested in whether or not the questions are chosen, but these questions are chosen poorly.
Thank you.
Chair Buckland and members of the committee, I'm here to support House Bill 2415.
Could you give us your name, please?
My name is Brian Brown, and I am a senior at Sheldon High School. I come to here to speak about the SIM and CAM, which I've passed and met and exceeded all the tests. After applying to many schools back east, none that are in the state of Oregon, I find it really not necessary or relevant that any of these tests that I should have taken any of these tests. One thing I do find about the test is that the test does reinforce one thing with students. The kids that do not pass the tests, they feel that if they're in a place that they can't pass the test, and there's nothing done to them that they can't pass test, and that they're just given a chance to take it over the following year or the next year that it's given, that those kids see if they cannot pass the test, then they really look at it as, if I can't meet the standards of the state of Oregon, who is recently being seen as a lower state that provides not as good education as other states in the country, then they're going to feel like they can't succeed later on in college and in high school. I think the money that is spent to administer the tests and to grade the tests in a time that we're scrounging around for money, that sports are being cut, teachers are being asked to teach lesser and lesser days in a state that already has the shortest school year in the country. I think it's ridiculous to implement a test that has already been tested people, that is essentially already taken place with the SAT and the PSAT, the PSAT. Many schools where I'm from do require the PSAT be taken as a junior. My school did not require that, but I found it that kids that take the SAT and that do well on it doesn't reflect either way how they did on the SIM or the CAM. So, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Not sure I can read the first name, but the last name is Summers. And we have Tim King and Joel Mobley. First name, please. Okay, it's just what I should have said. Sorry.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you for giving me this time. I am Aylin Summers, and I'm the principal of Milwaukee High School, and I've been listening for about an hour and a half, just kind of getting the drift of things, and I think that I'm going to be somewhat repetitive as a person who supports that we maintain the SIM and CAM measures. But I'll try to offer two perspectives that are a little bit unique, and one is from a research standpoint, and that is I brought a copy of my doctoral dissertation, which I defended in 1994, and the title of it is, and they're always ridiculous titles, but this one is Characteristics of Marginally Achieving Secondary Students and the Nature of Their School Experiences. And this is a study that I conducted at three different high schools where I was working over the span of this study. And what this is talking to kids who are in high school, real kids, and having them say to me what it's like to go to high school and immediately find the lowest possible way to get through the high school requirements and graduate with a diploma. Not thinking that you're going to go on to college, but believing that you will get a high school diploma and at least be able to go forward to community college without actually applying yourself academically. And the work that I did in talking to real kids, I tied to a national database of over 25,000 students all over the country. And what that showed me was whether it's urban, rural, suburban, big school, small school, that the kinds of kids that I characterize as marginal achievers are in high schools in America because, which it took me 2 years to answer a simple question, which the kids could tell me on the first day, is because you can get through high school and be a D student and get your diploma. And one of the main findings was that these kids never wavered in thinking that I can show up and not have a whole lot of application and still be able to get a diploma. And the SIM has changed that. And it's the application at Milwaukee High School is stupendous. We are a part of the district that is tying the SIM competencies to the diploma. And I assume that the red means to have my colleagues speak for what else is happening in North Clackamas. I wasn't here for the rule part.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 2744.
Give us your name, please.
My name is Joel Mobley. I'm a teacher at Rex Putnam High School. As a teacher of 24 years, I have seen a lot of new programs come and go in the state of Oregon. Some of these programs have been very good, and some of them have been very bad. The SIM is one of the good things that we have to work with. The students are the proof. I have watched students become very good speakers over the last 5 years because of the SIM work sample process. I believe that this would not have been the case if the full implementation of SIM hadn't occurred. The North Clackamas School District is one of the few districts to embrace SIM and to see value in the high-stakes performances. All through life, professionals in all fields have to take tests and perform high-stake work. Why should we do any different for our students? After all, aren't we preparing them for the real world? The SIM has many opponents and proponents, but I have learned that very few people oppose the idea of holding students accountable for their learning. I cannot speak to the pressure of the SIM test personally because as a social studies teacher, I have yet been affected, and it has yet affected my teaching. I can say, however, the pressure of the test is as great on the teachers as it is on the students. I have witnessed this firsthand from my colleagues trying to prepare the students to do their very best. If I could ask one thing, and that would be consistency and uniformity in placing this at the hands of the teachers. Teachers will do whatever you ask us to do. Our job is to teach kids, and that's what we do best. Tell us what you want us to do, and we'll do our very best to make sure that that happens. I don't care what the test looks like, but please don't take the work samples, because that allows every kid, high-achieving and low-achieving students, to do their very best and to show that they can be successful in high school. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Backlund and members of the committee, my name is Tim King, and I'm a science teacher in the North Clackamas School District. In the spring of 2000, the 90 students in my sophomore physics class took the Oregon Science Multiple Choice test, even though my students had not seen at least one-third of the material on the test. We reviewed for 3 days before the test. Every one of my students passed the multiple choice exam with meets or exceeds. I'd love to take credit for that success, but in truth, only those students that are academically talented take physics as a sophomore in our school, meaning those who are already good at taking tests. In the following year, once again, every sophomore in my class passed the exam, and this time over half of them exceeded, still having never seen one-third of the material before the review. The real question is, having passed the multiple choice exam, did they really know the material? 2 months later, they could remember little of the test, and they certainly could not apply the content they had learned only for the test. Fortunately, the physics class also incorporated other elements of the SIM. Students were required to give speeches that were assessed to SIM standards, do math work samples that were integrated into the physics curriculum, write a SIM research paper, and most importantly, do several inquiry labs that were assessed to SIM standards. At the end of the year, when they evaluated the course, and when I evaluated what they had learned from the course, two facts became clear. First, the material they had learned quickly in the review for the multiple choice exam, they had just as quickly forgotten. The material they had learned through the speeches, inquiry labs, research papers, and integrated math work samples, they had remembered. Not only did they remember this material, but they were able to expand on it, be creative with it, and apply it to different situations. Their confidence level with this material was very high. No Child Left Behind, with all good intentions, has forced us into regular multiple choice tests. House Bill 2415 proposes to leave it at that. While these tests do give us indications as to how things are going in a given school, they fall short of motivating any type of educational reform and progress, and certainly do not motivate teachers to teach well. There are many teachers who would prefer to lecture, hand out worksheets, and then give multiple choice tests after a brief review. I can assure you that this method is significantly easier on the teacher and the student. I have fallen into this trap from time to time, and it is by far the easiest alternative. There is even a sense of satisfaction as students who are good test takers do well, and the other students you can call lazy. After all, you gave them the material. The problem with this method is it produces minimal long-term retention and minimal student creativity. It does not acknowledge that there are other skills that transcend each teacher's individual subject matter. Most importantly, it ignores the brain research that tells us we will remember content longer if we incorporate more areas of the brain in the learning process.
Tim, could you finish up for a sentence or two, please?
I will. How many lectures at the chalkboard or overhead do you really remember from high school? I am a school teacher, and in truth, I can't remember any. It is hard work to teach the whole child in such a way that they remember the material, can apply the material, can create from the knowledge of the material, and yet still enjoy the subject matter. I can see why many would complain. We have met the demands in North Clackamas of the SIM CAM through project-based teaching. And I'll finish up real quick and read the rest. And I'm hearing support then of actually not of support of House Bill 2415.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have three folks who have traveled a considerable distance. We're going to call them up now. Martha Daniels, Velma Hartwig, and Megan Mowry.
Please.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Please pardon my breach of protocol if I make mistakes, Chairman and Distinguished Committee. My name is Martha Daniels. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I have taught in six states over the past 30 years intermittently, K through college. I was a professor last year over at Eastern Oregon, teaching teachers how to teach. And I've been in the classroom, though, in the trenches most of these past few years. I want to say that I think in concept and theory, SEM and CAM have merit. In actual implementation is where I have seen discrepancies that concern me. SEM, in its basic form, is supposed to ensure competency at a minimum standard level. However, these are not equal standards. After the first year of its implementation and each year thereafter, the tests were dumbed down because students didn't pass them. So they had different tests that we gave. And I was a teacher here doing this at eighth grade, third benchmark. And the other thing is they then brought out three levels of test for every single discipline, every single area. So eighth grade math had an A, a B, and a C. And as a teacher, we were instructed to A students get the advanced test, the B is the basic, and the C is for those who need a bit of a little help. And so this is not a standard. This is not showing any degree of competency. That concerns me. The other thing are the work samples and their the way they are presented. In the school that I taught at, I think that was improper, but we continually gave work samples, math, problem solving, writing, reading comprehension, continuously until finally we had three samples that could be put in each student's portfolio that represented their competency. Oh, no. Oh, I didn't drop 100 something else. Just, okay, anyway, the other, so this, to me, that is not giving a fair representation. The last thing, I do think there are alternatives, and that the SAT and our basic skills test are very, very representative of how our students do nationally.
Thank you. Please.
Mr. Chairman and the committee, if it would be all right with you, I have signed up for both bills. May I testify at the same time? Okay. I won't reiterate what a lot of people have said.
Your name, please.
I'm sorry, Velma Hartwig. Mm-hmm. I've talked to many teachers in our area. I've also talked to a principal I know. I've talked to a master teacher who's recently retired. They all hate it. They say, they tell me that this takes time that they could be using to teach the children the things they want to teach them instead of going over all this stuff and trying to help the children pass the test. And in addition, many members of our family have gone to universities and colleges. There isn't one that I know of that would accept a SEM or CAM. They all look at your grade point average. They look at your SATs, and many of them even give their own tests. The University of California, for instance, has what they call a bonehead English. If you don't pass it, you take bonehead English. And there are other tests, I'm sure, and many other subjects. And what I would suggest instead is a really good program for the children. And if I may, I'll give you an example of what our Eddyville Charter School is going to have. We're a small school, so there's some things that we can't teach that other schools would. But what we are going to teach is basic phonics. And our children have already had this installed in our school when it was still our school. And our children went from non-readers almost until up to the top reading group in the whole county. And we are also going to put in Saxon math, which is a very advanced form of math that has been really very successful. We're going to look at the history and geography and social studies book and have our teachers choose what they think is the best method. And we also, in addition, have a woodlands project. We're planting trees and other plants. And this will not only be for just the tree planting, it will be for teaching biology, for teaching art, for teaching how to use a computer to keep track, for business. And all of these things will be tested every week. They won't be tested once in a while in a sim and cam. And I'm sure you can read my testimony. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. We will stay a bit past 3 o'clock. We still have some people who would like to testify, and if we don't finish today, it's very regrettable. We did have an awful lot of interest. At any rate, Dee Young, Courtney Dresser, and Jason Williams, please. Who would like to lead off? You're there first. Okay. Why don't you start? Yeah.
My name is Mary L. D. Young, Representative Bachman, Committee Chair, and Vice Chairman Hobson, and the rest of the committee. I'm a former teacher. I'm a retired teacher who was involved. I'm a foreign language teacher who was involved in some of the original setups of the SIM and the CAM, and I think it would be just awful if you would dump the whole thing. So I am here to testify against House Bill 215. We need to keep in mind that this did not drop out of some educational void that we made we've already heard this, that there was a definite need for some reform in Oregon. And we have to keep in mind that the original bill was brought in by Vera Katz and passed in the legislature, and then it went to after it was passed, it went to the community, and there was professional people from the professional committees, from the professional business community, and the education community got together, and they said, what is it that a person should know and be able to do in Oregon? And that's where this came from. It's important to keep in mind that this came from the whole community, and we need to know that. It is now, it evolved to be a de facto add-on to our graduation requirement. Although we started testing in 10th grade, all the schools give the SIM at the graduation requirement, and we have to keep that in mind. There's been some evolving as it went along. Remember, it was part of the goal to make Oregon's workforce the best educated workforce by the year 2010. And we have to keep in mind, it's been going on for 10 years. I'm afraid we Americans have an instant coffee idea about how things happen. And to make a system-wide reform in 10 years is wonderful. We have done so many wonderful things, and it's not totally in place yet. But to get rid of it would be awful. We have some wonderful success stories. Wilsonville District, Representative Miller's district, had the highest people who passed the SIM. 60% of the Wilsonville High School had SIMs this year. About 50 or 55% of West Lynn did. And they're expecting that they will have 80% pass the SIM within the next year or so. They've done this by putting it as an integral part of their whole system, and maybe that's why it's hard to tell just exactly how much it really costs. One of the big things, the other district that isn't remarkable is Reynolds. Reynolds is not as high economic as the Wilsonville area is, and it had 45% of it. One of the reasons was that they required that all of their people, in order to graduate, not pass the SIM, but complete all of the work samples. Instead of taking the line of least resistance and saying, well, I don't want to do that, so I'm not going to. We need to keep in mind that the No Child Left Behind...
Could you finish the sentence?
Yes, I will. I'm just saying, we're saying the SAT scores that we have, and that we are the highest in the ACT scores in the nation. We are number two in the SAT scores. They have not happened because we've been doing it. It happened because of what's happened in education, and we have to keep that in mind. And we need to keep the idea that this, we are on the edge of success with the SIM. It's going to take a little while. There's still the foot draggers who don't want to get themselves in line. And we have a funding crisis to boot. But if you're right on the edge of success, don't lose it. That's all.
Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Courtney Dresser, and I am the Organ Advocacy Manager for the American Cancer Society. I'm here to speak in pretty specifically in regards to Section 4, Subsection 4 of House Bill 2744, which states that some of the Tier 2 subjects may be optional for schools to teach. Including in that is physical education and health education. An estimated 25,000 deaths are attributed to a lack of physical activity. We also know that without regular physical activity and nutritional guidelines, major killers of Americans, heart disease, cancer, and diabetes will occur. The American Cancer Society, understanding that living a healthy lifestyle can reduce a person's chance of getting cancer, have produced guidelines on nutrition and physical activity. We all know that learning to be active for life and becoming more physically fit becomes harder and harder to do as one gets older. I know that's true. It's important that we teach our children early on the necessity of eating well, the necessity of not smoking, the necessity of not consuming too much alcohol as one gets older, to do that, and the necessity of becoming physically fit. To do that, we need to have guidelines. Cancer Society has no position on SIM or CAM, and whether it remains or not, does not remain. What we do have a stand on is that there should be not only health education and physical education and standards, but there should be a way to assess them, and they should be mandatory in all schools. Children need to learn how to be healthy.
Good morning, members of the committee. And for the record, my name is Jason Williams, Executive Director of the Taxpayer Association. I start out my testimony with a quote from a book about what makes a difference between good and bad schools, and I love it. All low-performing schools have one thing in common. They allow too many things to disrupt the classroom, and nothing disrupts more than SIM and CAM. I know that it was said earlier, it only takes 2% of your time for the testing, but I have teachers saying that it takes weeks out of their year to prepare for the testing. Math teachers who say, I have to give up subject to teach it. Art teachers who have to say, well, because of speech requirements, there are things I'm never going to be able to teach in my art class because of things that have nothing to do with art. That's just very unfortunate. And one example, I think, of how one idea kind of gets out of control was this 1-6 grading system that's been forced upon the teachers. I have a teacher who, he's traveled around the world teaching. And every year he has to do the same ritual. He has to hand out these scores to kids and say, oh, you got a 4. And the kid says, where's a 4? Is that an A or B or C? Is it a 70%? No, he says, it's a 4. Let me explain it to you. Then the parents come in and say, what's this, a 4? Is it an A or B or C? Is it 60%, 80%? What is this? And, you know, this teacher who has taught all around the world says, every person in America knows what a grade A through F means. Everyone knows what an 80%, 1 through 100%, but no one knows what this 1 through 6 scoring means. And it's just an example of how something is just really being forced upon the teachers that gets out of hand. Now, I know, Oregon does well on the SAT, but, you know, SATs were not meant to compare between states because it all depends on the percentage of kids that take the test. But one of the best scores to look at from state-to-state testing is the NAEP scores. They are not only just a norm reference, they're content reference, so it doesn't matter if the whole country does bad. It will show how the country does bad. Well, in those NAEP tests, while SIM and CAM has been implemented over all these years, there has been no difference. So there really is no miracle story behind Sim and Cam. So actually, all of this taken away, the teacher time, taken away the teacher control, taken away classroom control, taken away local control, taken away all these tens of millions of dollars of school money, has no verifiable success story. That's why let's get rid of it and go back towards a more basic system. Thank you.
Okay. Let me see. Brenda Monahan and Brent Justad and Dick O'Connor, please. How are we doing here? Close.
Mr. Chairman, there's actually four of us here representing an organization, so we're hoping we could just all speak
at once. That'd be all right. Just there's only three mics, so someone will move.
Right. We've also been informed that we can pool our time into one group of minutes.
Do you want 12 minutes, you're saying? Or 16 to 12 minutes? Or what?
Right around 10 minutes or so for the four of us.
10 minutes?
That'd be okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the Education Committee, first of all, let me thank you for allowing us to speak to you. The four of us are from Lake Oswego High School. We're members of a group called SAFER, which is an acronym for Student Alliance for Economic Responsibility, although we don't certainly confine ourselves just to economic issues. And my name is Brent Jostad, and we're here to talk to you about SIM. And first of all, let me say that all four of us have SIM certificates, so it's not that we're opposed to the testing. In fact, we all support testing. And really what we'd like to do is kind of a cost-benefit analysis. Now, we've all heard that we don't know exactly how much SIM costs in money, but we do know what it costs a lot in time. I've been through the whole SIM process, and one thing is it takes a long time to just teach students how to take the test, especially you look at the math test. And the math test, especially the work sample tests, are different than any other test because you're really writing the answers in paragraph form. You're solving the problem, and then you're having to write an explanation in paragraph form. And one of the reasons for that is they're short on people who are able to score the math tests. The other day in our school, we saw on a teacher bulletin board that they're asking any teacher who has a teaching certificate in any subject to score math scoring tests. So it might be possible that a physical education teacher would be scoring a math assessment. And then, so you're really having to write your answers in paragraph form, first doing the math, then writing out, I added this and this because of this, et cetera, et cetera. So that takes hours upon weeks to teach. Entire curriculums have been restructured. Our social studies curriculum at the high school level used to be an excellent curriculum. We used to have sophomore year, we used to have an entire year on state government. We've had to entirely eliminate state government from our social studies curriculum, and instead we teach World War I and World War II 3 years in a row. We teach the exact same thing 3 years in a row so that students can meet the SIM test. First of all, we teach it at the freshman level in world history, then in sophomore level, which is now American history, and then again in AP history at the junior level. We've also added a class called Advanced Communication Skills, which is a half a year long that all students are required to take. This is entirely devoted to just meeting the SIM speaking requirement. It does nothing but teach students how that they can pass the SIM speaking requirement, and we're having teachers that's the only class that they have to teach. Being a senior myself, one of the things that has been most shocking to me is that not a single college I applied to asked me about my SIM. In fact, I've called some of them up and they've said they don't care about the SIM. I've applied to both Oregon schools and schools all over the country. None of them seem to care about SIM, and although we've heard that there's been a report recently that says that the SIM is as good as the SATs, I've reviewed that report a little bit, and it also says at the very end the best indication of how students will perform in college is simply their grade point average, which schools do look at. And while students that are getting their SIM may do well in college, it's not because they're getting the SIM that they're doing well in college, but it's because those are already high-achieving students. Those students who take the time to go get this SIM that no colleges look at and are putting the extra effort in, those students already work hard, so it seems that of course they're going to do well in college. Mr. Chairman, earlier in your remarks you made a golf analogy, and we actually have a letter that was written by the science chairman at our high school, and we have copies for all of you a little bit later on. And he actually makes a golf analogy too, and I'd just like to read you a little excerpt. Suppose that we think about a golf analogy. What if you spent the better part of a morning attempting to sink 50-foot putts, and after 100 tries did manage to make three of them? Does that mean you can make a hole out at 50 feet? Well, in a sense, yes, because your best efforts did achieve that. Can you do so consistently? No. In fact, 97% of the time you didn't succeed. The same argument can be made about the portfolio model. What is important in assessing a person's ability is not their best work, it is instead what they can consistently do. A student may, after repeated trials, manage to put three assessments in their portfolio that meet the standard. What if those were out of 10 tries altogether? Is it fair to say that a person who passed an assessment 30% of the time is capable? I don't think so. We also have a petition. Apparently, there have been some questions on whether or not there were really that many people who had a problem with SEM. So about 2 weeks ago, a website was put up with an online petition, and we'd just like to roll out this petition and show you some signatures of all the people who do care about SEM and think that SEM needs to go away. This letter is not just one teacher, but it's actually a representation of most of the teachers at my high school. I don't know of any teachers who have supported SEM. There's been a possibility that one English teacher refuses to take an opinion, and it's thought that she might be in support of SEM, but I don't personally know of any teachers that support SEM. So, we'll let you go ahead and look at this petition, but as you can see, it's quite large, and quite a few people actually oppose the SEM. But this consists of school board members, teachers, students, and just concerned voters.
And you don't have 20 copies of that, do you? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
I'm sure we can get you 20 copies if you like, Mr. Chairman.
No, don't.
So at this time, some of my colleagues, I'm sure, would like to make some remarks, so I'll go ahead and let them speak.
Hi, my name is Steven Aberg. I'm actually a junior at Lakesview High School. I have just a few points to make. I actually had this card that I had everything I wanted to speak about. At the start of the day when I came here, it had about three things on it, but I've been adding stuff, so I'll try not to take too long on this. And I've gone through the entire SEM program, started when I was in third grade, I believe, and I've done all the assessments, all the work samples, all the tests, and I break SEM down into three goals that I think it was originally meant to achieve. The first one was helping Oregon students, specifically in Oregon colleges. Having a SEM was supposed to help you get into Oregon colleges, and I believe it was originally also supposed to give you financial aid. You'd get X amount of money, I think, per month if you had a SEM. But now, not only do you get no money, schools don't care. Even Oregon schools, I haven't actually been applying to colleges yet, but I've heard many, many, many times that even schools in Oregon do not care about SEM. The second goal, as I see it, is standards for schools. You can have, this is for all Oregon schools, you have, this school is just meeting the requirements, this school is excellent, this school is poor. As I see it, the SEM really doesn't do that to the subjectivity of the tests. You do have the multiple choice tests, and multiple choice tests are totally objective, but you also have the portfolio and work sample system, which, as we told you, can be graded by people who really aren't qualified to grade that sort of test. That basically applies to math. But for the other tests, specifically the speaking and the writing ones, they're graded by the very teachers who not only teach those students, but that work at those schools. And so I think it's not a good idea in general to have the teachers that work at the school be responsible for how well the school is rated. And the third goal of SEM is individual student standards. You have, it's a way to say, this student is excellent, or this student needs improvement, but not only the same applies for the students as the schools, because you have their very teachers grading it, but not only that, you have the student able to retake the test and retake the work samples for a couple of years so they can eventually get the pass. I don't think it's a very good standard system if you can just keep trying again and again and again. I'd also like to point out that it's, of course, a waste of time and money. We've heard many times that nobody knows how much money, which is in of itself quite a problem if you can't tell us how much SEM costs. But I like to think of time as being the same as money, as schools are concerned, because you're cutting school days. Why are you cutting school days? Because schools don't have money. And we can definitely tell you that SEM costs time. SEM costs time to take the test, costs time to teach students how to take the test, how to teach teachers how to take the test, and all that time could be used to teach the students, or it could be cut and the money could be used to hire more teachers. Also, we've heard that SEM is just as good as the SAT. And I see no reason it keeps him if it's only just as good as the SAT, because not only is the SAT national, so you can compare within states, but it's also accepted to colleges. So I don't think it's a strong argument at all if you can say, our test is only as good as the tests that have more credibility. Let's see if there's anything else here I want to bring up. Oh, this bill does not eliminate testing, of course. We are not at all opposed to eliminating testing. We just find there are more effective tests out there, and I'm going to stop talking now so somebody else can talk a little bit.
I got a minute. It's tough.
All right. Thank you, Chairman, the rest of the Education Committee. All four of us were members of Youth in Government, a youth legislative program that took place about 2 weeks ago at the Capitol. And at the during this meeting, and group of students, all of them decided that the top of the docket, the most important piece of legislation we could pass as students, would be SIM-CAM reform. And we proposed, and it passed nearly unanimous in both the House and the Senate, that SIM would be repealed and that the Iowa State Test of Basic Skills would be instituted. And this was hundreds of students across the state of Oregon that felt this way, and almost all of them supported this. I personally spent hours looking for the cost of SIM, both in our district, statewide, through labor unions, through state treasury offices. No one could tell me. The most I could find out is we have two full-time staff members working on SIM, two teachers that teach SIM speech classes, and our district costs about $200,000 a day to run, according to our school board. And we spend around 5 to 10 days on SIM and CAM a year. And just by basic rough calculations, I've come out to that this costs about $1.2 million for our district to spend 5 days on testing, 5 days on preparation, and for those teachers to be paid. And I think this is a waste of our money to spend that much time and that much money on that test.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dick O'Connor. I'm with the Oregon Building Congress. And the Oregon Building Congress is dedicated to trying to bring a better quality of applicant into the construction industry. We represent large contractor associations, such as Associated General Contractors and the Oregon Building Industry Association that represent home builders, as well as large unions and community-based organizations and schools. What may be a little different from the testimony from the others as pertains to industry needs is most of the people who work in construction do not go on to college or don't aspire to go on to college. And yet our industry is very much supportive of continuation of the SIM and CAM programs. And the reason is that we need skilled technical workers who can read manuals and who can calculate well. We have put on a number of programs for educators and for young students, Construction Academy programs, where they see the relevance of algebra, geometry, as well as trigonometry into the building trades. One of the big problems our industry faces is that so many of the students who come out of school did not have the adequate grounding in math as well as science and language arts to do a good job as construction workers, and so they failed in their efforts in apprenticeship. We need to have students understand clearly that grounding in algebra, geometry, and trigonometry is key to them, to their accessing family wage jobs, which the industry offers to students who are capable. We also put on a program and in support of the CAM and Learning in Context called our Construction Academy program. We've had over 100 students participate in this, and the educators have come back to us and said the lights have gone on for the kids. And what happens is that the students, when they go out to build things on public lands, and last year in Clackamas County they built structures on BLM property, and in Medford this coming summer we're going to be doing the same. and in Portland Public Schools, we're going to be doing it in parks areas. The students come back and they realize, wow, it's really important to have a good grounding in math. It's really important to be able to read a manual. It's really important to follow instructions. And they find out when they do calculations, if they're off, they've got to redo the work again. And that's very expensive. So learning in context brings the reality to the whole educational enterprise, which if we exclude, is not going to be there. And I think as a consequence, we're going to do a poor job preparing students for jobs in the construction industry, but in all industries as well. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are well past our 3 o'clock. We are going to meet Wednesday evening at 5 to 7 for anyone who would like to return or who hasn't come yet. So with that, we're going to close the hearing on public hearing on House Bill 2415, and we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2744, and the meeting's adjourned.